Good morning, Joan, and a very warm welcome back after this long, hot summer.
Yes, we both been away on our vacation, and part of mine was working, and I think we'll have a few minutes today for me to tell you about my adventures. But actually, I was in the U.S. part of the time, of course, to see family and friends, and I was in Florida and also Southern California. But I have to say, Southern California, it was that 11-day period in August every year when they get warm. So I think I escaped humidity, but I did not escape warm temperatures.
Well, we didn't here either.
No.
You know that.
Oh no. I followed that, and our pastor sends weekly newsletters, and you know, like notwithstanding air conditioning, I'll you know change clothes three times a day.
Yeah.
So we're in an air conditioned studio, so we should we should do well today with our thoughts.
But it's still quite quiet in the Vatican, is my feeling.
Oh, it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I have to say to my listeners, to our listeners, I love this time of year, the July and August, notwithstanding the heat of the city and so forth. But the Holy Father's away, most members of the Roman Curia are away, for those of us who cover the Vatican. You know, we're taking our vacations ourselves, but the city empties. Romans go elsewhere, out of the country or to the seashore or mountains. Very little traffic on the street. There's actually seats on buses. It's just generally
quiet.
Well, I'm not talking about if you stand in line to go visit St. Peter's Basilica, but your tourist spots are crowded. But boy, just the neighborhoods where we live, it's a wonderful.
It's lovely.
The frenetic pace is not there in the summer, and it's really, really wonderful for all of us.
But having said that, the Pope has been continuing in his activities from Castel Gandolfo.
And he holds the, or Sunday he recites the Angelus, and then during the week he has had the, resumed on August 1st, the general weekly audience. And it's very interesting because in the past he's been at the inside the balcony for the inside courtyard where he's often had Angelus and the Wednesday audience. But now they open the front door of the Apostolic Palace that faces onto the Piazza della Libertà of Castel Gandolfo, and that's where he kind of gives the general audience.
Is that so that he can speak to more people?
I wondered about that myself. And I remember in the beginning of the summer seeing some pictures of work being done on the inner courtyard. Now, whether scaffolding or things like that affect, obviously, the number of people that can be present. I think it's only a few thousand that can fit inside. So, yes, more people could come into the town square and just pour out that
right.
main street and all the little side streets. So I would say, yes, he can probably address more people. So Sunday, as he always does at the Angelus, he talks about that day's gospel. And then he will make an appeal for some place in the world where there's strife, violence, and war going on. But what I liked about this past Sunday, obviously, I guess as an American, the Pope did greet the 62 new students at the Pontifical North American College, and called NAC, N-A-C, by those of us who live here. The NAC is the National Seminary of America in Rome, And the Pope told these seminarians, 62, that's a huge number. There's something like 240 students
all together
at NAC. It's an amazing. So vocations are increasing, and that's a wonderful sign. By the way, these 62 men come from 46 U.S. dioceses, and there are two Australian dioceses and one Canadian represented in that number as well. But the Pope has asked them to use their time in Rome, they'll be here 4 years, to conform themselves more completely to Christ. And what was fun was that the students sang Ad Multos Annos, you know, wishing the Pope many, many years. And he applauded in thanks. And so he prayed the seminarians and all Catholics would remain faithful to the Lord even when our faith in his teachings is tested. And I think we've seen and heard and read a lot of that lately, too. So a lovely, sunny, warm day, but still thousands of people, you know, flock to see the Holy Father. And also, you know, if you're not at Castel Gandolfo, all you have to do is go to St. Peter's Square.
And
because they've got
screen.
The huge screens
That's
up
right.
there. and you can follow the Pope as if he's right with you. So that's always a good
right.
event for people, because
right.
it's not easy to get to Castel Gandolfo.
No,
to the town itself. The train
I
that brings
think
you there.
There's a direct line there, is there?
There is a train, but I mean, oh my word! Once you get out at the station, it's about the size of the room we are talking in. And really, it's very, very small if you've ever been there. And then it's a huge climb uphill to the center of Castel Gandolfo. So you know, if you have your own car or go in a group bus, that's probably the best way. But it's definitely worth it. Beautiful place.
Yes.
A lot of nice restaurants overlooking
the lake,
which is a
Lake Albano,
a quiet volcano. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and then that's where the Pope held the Wednesday audience too, in which he spoke of the feast of John the Baptist martyrdom, and that's August 29th, of course. And I love what he said. He said that John's greatness came from prayer, from his relation with God, which is what prayer is. It's our talking to God, and when we're successful, it's our listening to God as well. He does talk to us. Sometimes we are not ready to listen or don't know how. But the Pope said, John the Baptist's martyrdom reminds us, Christians of our time, that we cannot stoop to compromises with the love of Christ, his word, the truth. The truth is the truth, and there is no compromise, he said during that general audience. And going back to what he said about John's prayer life, he said the courage to tell the truth, to live the truth, can only come from a solid relationship with God. And listen to this, I love it. Prayer is not a waste of time. It does not rob much space from our activities, not even apostolic activities. It does the exact opposite. Only if we are able to have a life of faithful, constant, confident prayer will God himself give us the strength and capacity to live in a happy and peaceful way, to overcome difficulties, and to bear witness with courage, which we always do need, I think, to bear witness to our Christianity. And he asked St. John the Baptist to intercede for us so we may always maintain the primacy of God in our lives. And it was very interesting. We mentioned just a second ago that the audience was in the square in front of the Apostolic Palace. But after the audience, the Pope had multilingual greetings, as he always does. But then he went back inside to the inner courtyard of the Apostolic Palace. And there were, so I guess maybe the if there's any repair work done, it's over. There were 2,600 French altar servers.
Oh, gosh.
So boys and girls. And they were among the many thousands, of course, of the faithful who had come there. And the Pope said, if you all in your lives hear the call, if you hear God calling you to the priesthood or religious life, answer with generosity. So had to be a special day. These altar servers came, I believe, I'm not sure, that it's an annual pilgrimage that they make from France.
So young boys, so, I imagine.
Yeah, and boys and girls.
Boys and girls.
Yes, uh-huh. And so they make this annual pilgrimage, and that's a lot of people to make a trip together, isn't it? That's a lot of buses and trains and things like that. So
the only other papal activity I can think of is a telegram he sent, right, Joan?
Right. Oh, my gosh, this is so sad. I'm sure that our listeners have, you know, heard on the radio or read in the papers about the huge explosion in Venezuela, where at least as of Monday, 48 people had died. It was an explosion at Venezuela's largest refinery, and actually one of the largest in the world. And there was some kind of a gas leak which led to this explosion. And I believe I read only a day or two ago that the fire was still burning from the gas. And so obviously the Pope sent condolences. He wrote to the Archbishop of Cumana, Venezuela, for this, for the victims. And he said he was very, very saddened by the news of the serious accident, and prayed for the repose of the souls of the dead. And he asked that the international community, the national community, you know, close in solidarity and help all those who were wounded and harmed. And I thought it was very interesting that the government, in a statement, mentioned that most of the victims were members of the National Guard and their families. Now, and they live right on the premises or next to the refinery. These men are charged with protecting the security of the refinery. Mm-hmm. So here that you had children, oh, wives, terrible. You know, sisters and so forth. So many, many people of the National Guard. And which is obviously very sad.
Very sad.
So
I can add a tidbit maybe of my own. Did you know that on Tuesday it was Father Lombardi's 70th birthday?
Yes, indeed. I did
was
send
it
him.
You did.
I sent him an e-card and a wonderful milestone in life, really. Sometimes it's hard to say certain numbers when we leave one decade and go to another, and we have to say we're 40 or 50 or 60 or 70. I practice saying that new number so that, you know, I don't break into tears when I... when it's actually mentioned.
You've got nothing to break into tears about, Jane.
No, you're absolutely right.
You just had a wonderful trip to the States, you said, but you also mentioned you went to Hawaii.
Oh, may I tell you, Hawaii is an earthly paradise. You could never see a movie, a picture, a postcard that is doctored to present the colors. The vividness of the flowers. I cannot tell you the types of flowers. I don't even know them all. The beauty of the flowers, the vividness of the colors, the water. I mean, you go to Waikiki Beach and it's like, I can drink this, you know? And then you'll see 100 feet out, that turns into another shade. I've got some pictures that show three or four different shades of the blue in the water. Now, I did not go to, you know, walk on the
you
beach
didn't go
or
surfing.
Anything. I did not go. I wanted to go parasailing. I really did, but literally ran out of time. I was actually in Hawaii for work. And when I would tell people, they'd kind of go, yeah, right. And then I would say, no, truly, I am going to research and walk in the footsteps of Marianne Cope, a sister of St. Francis, a nun, the mother of her order for many years, who became a blessed in 2005, and who will be canonized a saint October of this year. And Marianne was in Hawaii for 35 years, 30 of which were spent on the peninsula of Kalupapa. The first few years were spent along with Father Damien, now St. Damien, who worked with the victims of Hansen's disease, leprosy. And it's very interesting because these people are never, ever called lepers, ever. They're called patients. Today, there are 17 people, patients, who still live on Kalupapa. It's a peninsula on the island of Molokai. But what you have to understand about these people, when little was known about the disease, when it was simply believed that it was totally contagious. I mean, you and I could be in the same room 6 feet apart, and you'd sneeze, and I'd, you know, get the disease. Little was known about it. So in the 1800s, it was then the Kingdom of Hawaii. Hawaii became a state in 1959. Those who were ill with Hansen's disease, and it seemed to be around the Pacific Basin, it was Hawaiians, Samoans, Filipinos, and the people found to have Hansen's disease were exiled. They wanted to keep them all in one place. In the beginning, it was like near Honolulu.
Can you imagine the stigma?
Exactly. And that became a prison. They lived in certain grounds, and there were fences up. People couldn't go in. They couldn't go out. Very little was known about medical care, and nobody wanted to care for them. Nobody wanted to even touch them. And may I tell you, doctors would stand like 5, 6, 7, 8 feet away from a patient, and they could look at you, and let's say you simply had a skin rash because you had eaten a food you're allergic to or something. There were people who, because of a skin rash, were misdiagnosed and placed with the patients and then forced to live this life of exile. Now, when it was decided, I've forgotten the year as we speak, but when it was decided to bring these people to the peninsula of Kalupapa, which is paradise, it is stunningly beautiful. And when it was decided to bring them there, this was their exile, but there were no fences. Of course, there was the water. They could not leave. No boats came in. If the boats came in, they would leave them not at shoreline, but pretty far from the shore. if they could swim in, they could survive, and if they didn't survive, then, you know, that was their bad luck. So Father Damien had come. He was ordained, as a matter of fact. He had come from Belgium. He was ordained a priest of the Sacred Hearts of Jesus and Mary. He was ordained in Honolulu, and he'd only been a priest a short time when he was sent to Kalaupapa to care for the victims of leprosy. And he was going to be there 3 months, and they were going to go on this rotation. And at the end of 3 months, he said, "I'm staying here." And he said, "You know, please don't order me back under a," he had a vow of obedience. Right. But he said, "These people have nothing. They are the least of the least. They have to share blankets. They don't have beds. The circumstances were awful." He wanted to improve their physical circumstances and help return a smidgen of dignity to these people. And then Father was there a number of years. He died in 1889. But before that, Marianne Cope, our future saint, she came. She was in Hawaii.
Where did she come from?
Oh, she came from Syracuse, New York.
Oh, really?
Her family had come. Her father had married once and had 10 children. Only two reached adulthood. His first wife died, and his second wife, Mary Ann's mother, there were also he had 10 children with the second wife, and I think 8 of those did live to adulthood. But Mary Ann was only a year old when the family came from Germany, settled in Syracuse, New York. And settled in Utica, New York, and then it was in Syracuse that she entered the religious life and eventually headed her order. She built hospitals and infirmaries. And when she was called to Hawaii, this is a wonderful story. The king, because it was a kingdom then, asked particularly for the people who were so ill with Hansen's disease. He wrote letters, contacted 50 religious orders and asked them to please, please, please send someone to take care of these people because nobody else would. And one religious order answered, the Sisters of St. Francis. And so when Mother Marianne went to Hawaii, she was mainly in Honolulu for about 5 years. And she did establish a hospital there. She established one on the island of Maui. And she was very avant-garde for her time. She was not a nurse herself, but she had learned a great deal. Education and health care were two of the big charisms mm-hmm. of the Sisters of St. Francis, a very new order at that time. And so when she was in the health care, just a kind of a common sense, I don't know whether it was a motherly common sense in her, said, all right, anytime you are with anybody who's sick, before you even go in and treat them, touch them, help them, change their sheets, I want you to wash your hands. And it had been the practice in many medical schools to wash your hands after you were with a patient. She insisted that it be done before and after. And when she did bring 6 nuns to Kalaupapa to take care of these people, she said, none of you will ever contract Hansen's disease. Now, Damien did die of it. He contracted it. But none of the nuns, and there's 2 there today, none of them have ever contracted it. So the life, I will be writing about this at great detail, pictures and everything else, on my blog. Life on Kalaupapa, it was an earthly paradise. But the people, one of the persons who still...
Are the Sisters of St. Francis still there?
Yeah, oh yeah, there are 17 who still live there. Now, in 1969, because of treatment that had been developed for leprosy, in 1969 the quarantine was lifted and these people could leave the island. And they are not in any way contagious. In mm-hmm. fact, you have to have a genetic predisposition mm-hmm. in order to, which Father did and apparently Mother Marianne didn't. So the people that live there today, they were forced to leave their homes. They were forced. I met some people who'd been there since the 60s, okay? Gosh. Gloria will be here in Rome for the canonization. My guide for the day, Melli Watanuku, she is of Samoan origin. She will be here in Rome. And again, there's no way someone like that would be your guide if there was any contagion developed. But what happened over the years, because they were exiled, somebody, I think it was in the 60s, some lawyer said, wait a minute, we have to see these people get compensation. You know, generations of these people have been on this peninsula. Beautiful as it is, this has been their exile. And people were there to take care of them. The National Park Service has been there for many, many years and is responsible for the Peninsula of Kalaupapa. So the agreement was made between the government and the residents of Kalaupapa, who have a very big voice. Even if there was only one left, they have a very big voice in how many things are run. The agreement was made that they would get homes. They don't have to buy them. They would be given homes, 3 meals a day, and medical care for the rest of their lives. So when the quarantine was lifted in 1969, they all could have gone back to their places of origin, but they didn't know anything else.
Of course.
This was their life. And so those that are there today have decided to stay. Where am I going to go? And besides, I guess if you have a home and 3 meals and medical care, as it should be, then you would not want to go to the mainland or anyplace else. You know, those who were able to work for the government, Gloria was. She has 31 years as a civil servant, so she will have had some income and a pension and stuff like that. But still, notwithstanding the astonishing beauty of Kalaupapa, I love the mountains of Hawaii. They're green. They're covered with trees. It's not like seeing the Alps as imposing as they are, just all granite and stone. They take away your breath. And there are I've forgotten as we speak the name of them, the cliffs that go from like Kalaupapa up to Topside on Molokai. They're the highest cliffs in the world.
Gosh.
And they're stunning, just absolutely stunning. So
when is the canonization?
October 21st. And it's wonderful. I mean, you can have Bishop Silva here. He's leading of Honolulu. He's leading a pilgrimage. Steve Prokoff, who heads the Park Service.
Will she be canonized on her own, or will there other be?
No, I think there's five total or five others. Oh, we have another American, the Indian, Kateri Tekawita. So, I mean, two Americans. But, you know, the story, we could really do an hour's,
I think we should.
Hour's story on this, the amazing life of these people who brought dignity back to other people who were totally exiled and outcast of society. And we have outcasts today, too. We have the homeless.
We
have many, many people like that that others of heroic virtue are taking care of. But what amazes me as I tell the story is you've got this little peninsula, this speck of dust almost in the Pacific island on the whole face of the earth, and it has two saints.
That's, you know, very beautiful.
Damon and Marianne. And we're working on Brother Joseph Dutton. He lived there for 44 years. He was originally from Stowe, Vermont. And was in the Civil War. After the war, there was a marriage that went bad, kind of a post-war syndrome. He led a life of alcoholism and debauchery and so forth for like 10 years. And one day, how else can I say it, he like saw the light. He realized how he'd been living, wanted to make reparation, he did enter a religious order when he was obviously, you know, sober and everything else for a year. He entered a religious order, and then he heard about Father Damien. And he went to Kalaupapa, and he was there for 44 years. Gosh. So there's people working on giving Kalaupapa its third
saint. We'll definitely come back to this, Joan. We'll have a chance to talk
At the time of the canonization, obviously, we will.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.